Chapter 32.
They should have returned by now.
I warned you,
said Jack of Diamonds, nonchalantly popping dried dormice feet into his mouth.
Hope for the best, but expect the worst.
They should have returned,
General Doppelganger said again, pacing back and forth in the tent, an activity that apparently fell short of soothing his anxiety, for he split into the twin figures of Generals Doppel and Ganger, and they paced. But this did not ease their minds either, and the generals melded back into one.
It will come as no surprise to me if Dodge fails, said Jack of Diamonds. We should be planning for a future we still have the power to shape.
He glanced uneasily at Hatter Madigan, who'd been sitting silent and still in a corner of the tent, a pocket-sized holographic crystal in his hand, ever since General Doppelganger told him of the millinery's bloody demise. Every so often, Hatter pressed his thumb against the back of the crystal, and its image came to life. A female Wonderlander, laughing and saying something in a teasing tone. Hatter made Jack uncomfortable. What was going on in that hatted head of his? What if he had gone slowly insane from his 13 years of exile, with its mysterious traumas and challenges? An insane fellow with such deadly skills! To lessen his fears, Jack tried to engage the milliner in a little chit-chat.
Tell me, Hatter, on your travels, did you have much time to explore what the fruit pies were like?
Ever so slowly, Hatter turned to face Jack and blinked several times, as if adjusting his eyes to the sight of the wigged gentleman. Jack laughed uneasily.
Just trying to break the monotony of all this waiting.
He held a handful of dormice feet out to Hatter.
Dormouse foot?
Hatter looked away, said nothing. A cheer sounded from outside. Hatter stood, pocketed his holographic crystal, and walked quickly out of the tent. General Doppelganger and Jack of Diamonds hurried after him. And if ever there was a welcome sight to a mourning milliner, this must have been it. Princess Alice, safe and apparently healthy, surrounded by happy Elysians, Gwynooks and Tuttlebirds, the forest trees adding their voices to the chorus celebrating her return. A welcome sight, to be sure. Yet Hatter showed little emotion, a slight upward flicker at the corners of his mouth. Dodge caught his eye, and the two nodded to each other in mutual respect.
"Is it Hatter?"
Alice asked, spying his top hat in the crowd. The Elysians parted to let him through.
"I am pleased to find you well, Princess."
Alice looked at her surroundings.
"Am I well? I shouldn't say so."
Hatter lowered his head.
"Yes. There is no excuse for my losing you, and I accept full responsibility. If you choose to demote me to an inferior post as a result of my failure, I hope I may accept it with grace. But, Princess, there is much to do if you are to be successful against Red."
Alice sighed, and when she spoke next, she sounded more like a monarch than she would have thought possible.
"It's not surprising, Hatter, that you blame yourself for this failure, as you call it. But I do not blame you. Who's to say it wasn't I who lost you so many years ago? I just meant that all of this," with a gesture she indicated the Elysian headquarters, "is a bit of a shock to me after so long a time away."
Hatter stepped aside as General Doppelganger bustled up to her, bowing repeatedly, then splitting in two.
"Princess Alice,"
Generals Doppel and Ganger simultaneously cried.
"We are ecstatic to find you safely returned to us. Welcome, welcome."
The assembled throng was too busy celebrating to notice the cloud that had darkened Jack of Diamonds' brow at the sight of the long-lost princess. but Jack was nothing if not willing to turn an unforeseen circumstance to his advantage. He worked his lips into a smile, and sensing a lull in the greetings, butted his way through the crowd.
"Ranking fellow coming through," he said. "Out of the way! Out of the way!"
His prodigious rear knocked people left and right with every stride. He presented himself to Alice.
"Ah, princess! Surely you remember your favourite childhood playmate, Jack of Diamonds?"
Alice glanced at Dodge, who fell to picking at the edge of his sword with great intensity. Jack took her hand and kissed it.
"I have been pining after you for ages, my princess. I'm sure you recall that we were to be married. I have not taken a wife in honour of your memory, and I flatter myself that you will still have me, provided you are as pleased as I am with my manly figure."
He turned this way and that, modelling his physique for her. Whether it was the unappetizing figure of Jack of Diamonds twirling around like a fairy, the expectant, joyous faces crowding around her, or both, Alice herself couldn't say. But she suddenly felt that it was all too much. "I think if I could just lie down for a short while," she said.
"The princess wants a bed,"
a nearby Gwynook shouted.
"Princess wants a bed,"
echoed a two-card. And as the White Knight and his pawn bustled off to make a bed for Alice, Elysian after Elysian repeated this fact as if it were cause for celebration in itself. Yet another remarkable happening, for which they hadn't dared hope. Chapter 33. With Alice resting in his tent, General Doppelganger organized a meeting to discuss tactics. Bibwit Hare, the White Knight, Jack of Diamonds, Dodge and Hatter Madigan assembled in the Elysian War Room, which wasn't so much a room as a patch of ground in the thickest part of the forest headquarters, furnished with a crystal-topped hovering table and matching chairs, as well as four easy-erased gemstone writing boards that served as walls, on which every Elysian military campaign of the last several years had been drawn up, hashed out, organized.
"But can she lead us?"
General Doppelganger was asking.
"She must," said Hatter.
"What lunacy!"
boomed Jack of Diamonds. But after seeing Hatter's expressionless stare, he added,
"I mean, what lunacy, with all disrespect, sir."
"There is no doubt she will need as much training and education as can be had in the short time we have," said Bibwit Hare.
"All I see is a young woman unprepared to conjure even a jolly jelly with her imagination, let alone battle red for control of the queendom," said Jack of Diamonds.
The general nodded, thoughtful.
"Knight, what do you say?"
"She is the princess. The line of succession rightfully ends with her. If she is willing to lead us..."
"If she is able, you mean," muttered Jack.
"Then we must let her, if we are truly to be called Elysians."
Dodge, when present at these meetings, usually kept silent, and listened to the exchange of strategies, disagreements over protocol, and interpretations of intel reports, with stifled exasperation and anger. They were the self-proclaimed saviours of the queendom. They should have been engaging Red in battle, not talking about it.
"I'm wondering," he said, gazing at nothing in particular, and the mere fact that he had volunteered to speak caused a sudden hush, "how Red knew where Alice was." He fixed his look on Jack of Diamonds.
"Are you accusing me of something?"
"Suppose I am."
"Gentlemen,"
the general started.
"Then I need not suppose you're a simpleton," said Jack of Diamonds, "because I'll have it for a certainty."
Dodge stood,
hand at his sword.
"We have enough trouble fighting Red," interposed Bibwit Hare. "It won't help our chances if we are fighting among ourselves."
Jack of Diamonds chortled, smug and dismissive.
"Gentlemen, I don't wish to fight. I have great respect for Mr. Anders' accomplishments on the field of battle, but he knows nothing about politics. He is, as I am sure you'll agree, too apt to use his sword when he might better employ his tongue."
"And you are too apt to powder that wig instead of fighting alongside us when it counts."
Jack waved him off.
"Let Mr. Anders believe what he wants. My only concern is Alice. There's no doubt in my mind that she is our lost princess, but I don't think her mentally or physically capable of leading a charge against Red."
"It will take time," Bibwit concurred.
"It will take the looking-glass maze," said Hatter.
"And that," Bibwit agreed.
Jack of Diamonds slapped his forehead in disbelief.
"Not that old bunk! The looking-glass maze was proven pointless long ago. Red herself never went through any maze."
"All the more reason why she can be defeated," said Bibwit.
"General, I urge you, let us agree to the summit and stop this idiocy before it goes any further. An opportunity such as the one Red is offering won't come again."
"No queen can reach her full strength and power without passing through the maze," said Bibwit.
Jack of Diamonds lost all patience.
"Yes, by all means, let's run along to the maze. Hurry, hurry, to the all-important looking-glass maze, while our future survival hangs in the balance."
"We can't simply run along, as you say," instructed Bibwit Hare. "Only the caterpillars know the location of the maze. Alice must meet with the caterpillars."
"But they haven't left the Valley of Mushrooms since Red became queen," said the White Knight.
"Then she will have to go to them."
"She'll need a military escort," Dodge said. Jack of Diamonds pulled his wig down over his face and spoke into its thick, powdered curls. Though muffled, his voice was audible.
"If you want to force her into a confrontation she's ill-equipped to handle, all I can say is, may the spirit of Isa help anyone who should fall under your people's care. You'd march them off to their deaths."
"Why are you so eager for us to compromise with Red, I wonder?" The question came from Dodge. But Jack only buried his face deeper into his wig and groaned.
"Bibwit,"
the general said,
"shouldn't you be getting back to Mount Isolation in case Red suspects something?"
"I'm not going back. The cat has seen me with Alice. My place is here now, with her."
It would have been nice to maintain a spy in Red's court, but the general understood.
"Well, we're glad to have full use of you at any rate."
Bibwit's ears twitched, and a moment later they all heard it. Someone quickly approaching. Hatter stood, hand at the brim of his top hat, and Dodge jumped up, ready to fight. But it was only the Rook, battered and bruised from his skirmish with the cat in the Whispering Woods.
"You made it," he said, smiling at Dodge. "You made it. I'll get the surgeon."
The Rook shrugged him off.
"I'm all right. Surface wounds only. We lost 4/5 of our men, though. Didn't even take one of the cat's lives." "But the princess is safe?"
Dodge nodded.
"That counts for something."
The Rook lowered himself into a vacant chair.
"So, what did I miss?"
Well,
said General Doppelganger,
Most here believe that Alice must pass through the Looking Glass Maze, if she is to successfully challenge Red. But I haven't yet voiced my opinion.
Jack of Diamonds peeked out from his wig, hopeful.
I think we should give Alice the opportunity of meeting with the caterpillars in the Valley of Mushrooms,
said General Doppelganger.
Let her try the maze, if she is able.
No!
Jack said, and again buried his face in his wig.
But in the meantime...
The General yanked Jack of Diamonds' wig off his face.
Inform Red that we'd be pleased to attend her summit, if she's still willing to have it in the light of Alice's return.
To the others, he said,
Responsibility to the cause requires we have alternate plans should the princess fail.
She won't fail, Dodge said. I won't let her. Chapter 34 Red Moon had risen. Its bloody light burned down on the chessboard desert through a cloud-clotted sky. Toxic vapours burping continuously out of the factory engaged in manufacturing Red's war machines. The cat skulked through the halls of the Mount Isolation Fortress, his own unease dwarfed by the violence of the sky over the steaming desert. A sky that became visible to him only as he entered the spiral-shaped hall leading to the observation dome, where Red waited for proof that her niece was no longer among the living. This was not a briefing the cat longed to make. He entered the observation dome and found his queen staring out of a telescopic panel at Wondertropolis, the walrus butler busy polishing the other panels with a cloth. Red's back was to him. Without turning around, she said,
I see you, but I don't see my niece's head.
And before he could utter a syllable, a scepter speared him. The walrus gave a little jump and started for the exit.
Oh, I'd better check on...
Stay where you are!
Red shouted.
Yes, I still have plenty of work to do here, your imperial viciousness.
Back to polishing the telescopic panels went the walrus butler. The cat stood unsteadily on two legs, Red's scepter jutting out of him. In theory, he was fortunate to have had 9 lives, but each death was painful. The cat sometimes wished for only 1 life. He fell to the floor, dead. Red stalked back and forth next to his lifeless body. She took hold of her scepter. The cat's eyes flickered open, and the wound in his chest healed. He slowly got to his feet, licking himself clean.
Tell me how you managed to fail this time, Red demanded.
The Elysians reached her first. We chased them back through the Pool of Tears, but...
Alice in Wonderland? Unacceptable,
Red screeched, and again the cat felt the stinging, mortal blow of her scepter. The walrus blubbered and dropped his polishing cloth, bent to pick it up, and bumped his head against a telescopic panel. Red tried to pinpoint Alice's location in her imagination's eye, saw a confusion of foliage and trees, a forest of some kind. But there were many forests in the queendom.
Where is Bibwit Hare? I want the royal secretary here, now!
I'm sorry, your imperial viciousness, said the walrus, rubbing his head. Truly very sorry. But Bibwit Hare is not here. No one's seen him since...
He's with the Elysians now.
The cat had regained consciousness and lay on the floor watching his wound heal.
No more unwelcome news out of you, my feline friend,
Red threatened. She motioned with her fingers, and the cat found himself standing upright.
Come with me.
She swooped out of the room, her heels click-clacking on the polished floor. Casting a last, squinty-eyed glance at the walrus, the cat followed Red down the spiralling hall,
through dim rooms of questionable purpose, to the vacuum shaft that shot them into the bowels of the fortress. They entered an enormous room in which an army of glass eyes stood in columns, waiting for orders. As Red opened her mouth to speak, she projected her holographic, anger-gnarled face onto Wondertropolis's billboards and government-sponsored poster crystals, Wonderlanders pausing amid their various jobs and activities to listen to her spew the words she spoke to the glass eyes at Mount Isolation.
Loyal subjects, there is a pretender to the throne in our midst. She calls herself Alice Hart. Your assistance in her capture, in her death, is hereby commanded. She is in one of our forests. Find her by the time my moon sets, or I will burn every forest in Wonderland. Whoever accomplishes this will be rewarded with the knowledge that she or he has earned my eternal favor.
Red's face vanished from the city's billboards and posters, replaced by the usual advertisements for Red's Hotel and Casino, Red Apartments, Jabberwocky Matches, and reward offers for reporting followers of White Imagination. Wonderlanders went back about their business, though to be sure there were some who considered Red's eternal favour worth having, and would do what they could to find Alice Hart. Back at Mount Isolation, the last of the glass eyes streamed out of the fortress into the desert. Red turned to the cat, her voice echoing through the empty room.
Tell Jack of Diamonds it's time he proved his loyalty once and for all.
Chapter 35. She hadn't really intended to sleep. Had just wanted to be alone, to think things over. How long since I was standing beside Leopold in Westminster Abbey? It seemed so long ago. Such a terribly long time ago. What's become of him? And the Littles? What do they think has happened to me? What are they doing at this very moment? She had grown to love them. Perhaps as a kidnapped person grows to love those who hold her captive, but it was love. Alice knew that now. All of this thinking solved nothing, and it was a relief when Bibwit entered the tent carrying a small, neatly folded stack of clothes.
"Please put these on, Alice," he said. "I'll wait for you outside."
It was an Elysian uniform. Makeshift, as all things Elysian had to be in the red-controlled queendom. The shirt and trousers didn't match in colour. Their particular weave of nanofibres was coarse by Wonderland standards, and yet, rubbing the hem of the shirt between her index finger and thumb, Alice knew it to be smoother and softer than the finest silk in England. Yes, they were plain garments, as plain as anything worn by the poor in Genevieve's time. But with one difference, the faded badge of a white heart on the end of the right shirt sleeve. Alice, stripped out of her wedding gown, and torn as it was, carefully laid it on the general's cot. She dressed herself in the Elysian outfit and wanted to know what sort of figure she made in the unfamiliar clothes, but there were no looking glasses in the tent.
Nothing left to do. Must face the future, whatever it holds.
With a decided breath and a firming up of the shoulders, she stepped out of the tent. Bibwit came forward with beaming countenance and took both her hands in his. He looked her up and down, approving of what he saw.
"Were you to wear one, Alice, you could make the saddle blanket of a spirit Dane look regal." "Thank you, Bibwit, but no buts. You've just returned to us, and it is too soon to express whatever doubts you undoubtedly have with that most cowardly of words, that qualifier of qualifiers, but."
Alice smiled, more a matter of facial muscles than a feeling.
"It's good to see you're still the same old Bibwit Hare," she said. "After our recent clash with the cat, I thought you might have become a man of heroic action and no longer cared for the subtleties of the intellect.
I? A man of heroic action?
I leave such things to others.
But of course I am the same old Bibwit Hare, Alice. I am the same precisely because I am old. I tutored your great-grandmother's grandmother, and, yes, I remember, I've seen enough political upheavals to fill countless heads. Nothing has changed me yet. I admit that this red business is the worst I've experienced, but I'm much too old to change. Now, enough about me, though I am a fascinating subject. Come.
He led her to an arrangement of weathered, empty ammunition containers that served as a seating area, lowering himself onto a container that had once held orb generators fresh from Red's factory. Bibwit's expansive brown robe puddled around him. He looked like a small brown volcano with a white head. Tea was brought by a young girl wearing a Homburg hat and cracked leather overcoat, so timid in Alice's presence that she didn't dare raise her eyes to look at the princess.
"She's a shy one," Alice said after the girl had hurried off. "Not usually. It's you that makes her so. She was born here, in this very camp. Do you know what they call themselves, all of these people?"
Alice shook her head. How could she know?
"Alysians."
Bibwit spelled it out. Her heart gave a little jump.
"Alysians? They ask too much of me."
"I don't think I'm ready for all of this," she said. Bibwit studied her a moment, his ears twitching and swivelling in response to every passing sound. He described the changes that Wonderland had suffered in the past 13 years. And though his wisdom covered many subjects, there were things even he didn't understand, most of which concerned her. So then it was her turn to talk, to try to explain what felt inexplicable.
"I had to turn my back on all my Wonderland memories," she said. "I had to shut my mind to them in order to survive in a world that didn't believe. I resisted for a long time, but it became..." "So that's why you were to be married?"
Alice nodded.
"I will always belong partly to that other world now." "Wisely put. You can't spend so much time in a place and not carry a bit of it inside you. But this is your rightful home, Alice. This is where you belong."
"Is it?"
She looked around. "How can they call themselves Alysians when I hardly feel Alysian myself? It's too much. They ask too much. It seems to me that I no longer quite belong anywhere. And what about the family I left behind? What about Leopold, the man I was to marry?" "We will provide for the people who nurtured you as their own, if we have the luxury to do so in the future. As to this Leopold character, we have more important things to consider than one man's love, be he of this world or any other."
Alice caught sight of Dodge, staring at them from behind a tent. She raised a hand to wave, but he ducked out of sight and didn't show his face again.
"You have a powerful imagination, Alice," said Bibwit Hare. "The Alysians will need it, and the fate of the Queendom depends on it. In what little time we have, my job is to educate you in its uses and limitations, according to the precepts of white imagination." "It's gone."
Bibwit's large ears crimped in perplexity.
"Your imagination has not gone, Alice, because there is nowhere it can go to. It is within you, whether you like it or not. You will see. You were born to be a warrior queen, like your mother."
But here the wise tutor paused, remembering Alice sitting backward on the Spirit Dane after she'd emerged from the pool of tears.
She had been disoriented, of course. Yes, better to think positive thoughts. "You will fight alongside your army," he continued, "and you will face Red, because only you have the strength and power to defeat her."
"A warrior queen?" Alice guffawed. "What do I know of warfare or weaponry? The only time I've lifted a sword was when Dodge and I used to play our juvenile games."
"By successfully navigating the looking-glass maze, you will evolve to warrior queen. The maze will release what's inside you." Alice shook her head, doubtful. "How the looking-glass maze will accomplish this, even I can't say," Bibwit continued. "In Queendom Speramus once stated, only she for whom the looking-glass maze is intended can enter. I look forward to the day when you can tell me what's inside."
"I don't know, Bibwit. I just don't know."
Wasn't it possible that she might no longer be the rightful heir to the crown? Her years and experiences in that other world had severed the girl she was from the woman she was supposed to have become. Red did away with 2 generations of heart rulers that horrific afternoon. "Tell me about Dodge," she said. Bibwit was quiet for a long time. "None of us is the same since Red's return. Some of us are more changed than others. As to the man Dodge Anders has become, I think it best to let you discover that for yourself." The tutor hopped to his feet. "Well, we'll soon be making a trip to the Valley of Mushrooms, where the caterpillars will instruct you. Finish your tea, collect your thoughts, and then we will begin the lesson we should have begun 13 years ago. Alice watched Bibwit scurry off. Not having touched her tea, with no thought to what she was doing or where she was going, she stood and walked through the camp. Elysians gathered outside their tents or cooking food over gemstone fire pits bowed to her as she passed. Some shouted, "In Alice we trust!" Others declared, "May the light of white imagination again shine on Wonderland, my princess!" Alice tried to look as hopeful as she could under the circumstances.
"Elysians! They call themselves Elysians! Now see where I've ended up!"
She stood outside a tent. Not just any tent. His. Her feet carrying her there almost without her knowing.
"Should I announce myself, or—"
But no need. Here he was, stepping out of the tent.
"Hello,"
she said. Dodge tensed, pushed out his chest, and stood with his back straight. "Princess!" He was surprised, caught off guard, she could see that.
"Was there something you wanted?" she said. "Before, when I—"
"Bibwit's told you that we'll have to risk a journey to the Valley of Mushrooms?"
"Yes." "Had thought, hoped, it was something else. But what, exactly? Dodge, do you really think I can lead a battle against Red's forces?"
"I do."
"That makes one of us. I'm sure it's too late for whatever Wonderland expected of me. I'd ask you to take me home, but I no longer have any idea where that is." She felt unbearably sad all of a sudden, and wished that someone, anyone, would put a comforting arm around her.
But her pout only seemed to harden Dodge, to make him even more callous toward her.
"There's something you need to see," he said. "If the future of the queendom weren't at risk, and if Dodge weren't being so cold and distant toward her as he led her out of the Elysian headquarters, Alice might have been able to convince herself that they were heading off on a harmless adventure, as they used to do in simpler times."
Chapter 36
Jack of Diamonds tramped through the everlasting forest, carrying a case the size and shape of a bread box.
"Prove my loyalty? Haven't I proved it time and time again? Haven't I turned in traitors who dared to steal her weapons? Haven't I kept her informed of Elysian activities? If just once she didn't let herself be governed by her temper. A summit. That's how I would have dealt with it. Pretend to grant the Elysians statehood, lull them into complacency. I would marry the princess while remaining loyal to Queen Red, and she'd control the Elysians through me. That's the way to handle things. But all anybody around here wants to do is fight."
A kitten the colour of burnished gold poked its head out of the top of the case.
"No, you don't," Jack said to the animal. "You'd better stay out of sight altogether."
He put a fat palm on the kitten's head and tried to push it back into the case. But the kitten hissed open-mouthed and scratched him with a nimble paw.
"Ow!"
Jack tossed the case to the ground, sucked at his wounded hand. The surrounding trees twittered. Jack could see the kitten's tail whisking back and forth out the top of the case, but the animal made no sound. Wasn't he in a favourable position here? He had his arch-rival stuffed in a bag. He could easily do away with a little kitten. Yes, yes! Then Red would have to rely on him, and him alone, for counsel. And he'd convince her to enact plans of which he could take better advantage. But what of the task at hand, the ambush? And what if Red were watching him right now in her imagination's eye? No, he'd better wait. To get rid of the kitten was too risky at present. But at the first opportunity... He picked up the case and continued on through the forest. The kitten's tail, still snaking up out the top of the case, brushed against his hand. He paused and looked around. Now, where was the Elysian headquarters? He always had trouble finding it. To the left, maybe? Yes, definitely to the left. But after going a couple hundred paces, he decided it must have been the other way. But 400 or so paces in the opposite direction seemed to bring him no closer. He was lost. The kitten growled. But then a wink of sunlight on a crystal shooter caught Jack of Diamonds' eye. Two Elysian guards patrolling the perimeter of the headquarters. Aha! He knew it had been close. But perhaps, now that violence was near, it would have been better to stay lost. He approached the guards with a cautious tread, the colour draining from his face, making it almost as pale as his beloved wig.
"We must increase security now that Alice is here," he said, coming upon them. "I have requisitioned more perimeter guards."
"If you believe it necessary, Lord Diamond."
"Obviously I do."
"Yes, sir."
"Is the mirror keeper about?"
"Not at present, sir."
"Ah, well."
Jack shifted his weight from one leg to the other. He had started to sweat. His scalp itched horribly.
"Any idea when he'll be back?"
"No, sir."
"Oh."
He felt the kitten moving inside the case, impatient.
I have something for him."
The guards said nothing.
"Maybe one of you should take a look at it."
If the guard who volunteered had had the time, he might have noticed that Jack of Diamonds was trembling. But as soon as the unfortunate fellow held his face over the opening of the case to see what was inside, out came the two manly arms of the cat. Jack stumbled backwards, dropping the case. But before it hit the ground, while the guard was screaming, the cat morphed into full assassin and did away with both guards. A wave of alarm passed through the trees and shrubs of the forest. The cat turned to Jack, his claws dripping blood.
"Summon the cat."
Jack reached into a pocket with bumbling fingers. He raised a marbled crystal bubble to his lips and blew into it. Nothing. It was a sound for the cut alone. He heard them coming, the scissor sound of their stalking limbs, 3 decks in all, 156 soldiers.
I think I should wait out here,
Jack of Diamonds managed.
I don't want my position with Red to be compromised, which it will be if I'm seen by General Doppelganger or any of the others.
The cat knew better. But it was all right. The cowardly Jack of Diamonds would only get in his way.
Do what you want, he spat.
And accompanied by the high cards of the cut, he pounced into the Elysian headquarters while the lower numbers began smashing its perimeter mirrors. Chapter 37 Dodge hadn't told her that they'd be leaving the forest. They should have informed somebody.
Bibwit, the general, Hatter. We should have told them we were going. That's what the old Dodge would have done.
The 10-year-old Dodge Anders, who had prided himself on strict adherence to military procedures and the importance of communication among members of a fighting force. But a lot about the adult Dodge was unlike the child Alice used to know. He kept in front of her, moving at a rapid pace, and she often had to trot just to stay in sight of him. He turned around every now and again to make sure she was still following him. But really, he could have been more considerate. Wouldn't hurt him to slow down a little. They came to the edge of a shabby city, the one she had already passed through this day. The pawn shops and military checkpoints, the ear clutter of recorded voices declaring,
"Better red than dead," and "The red way is the right way."
The barrage of gaudy, flickering advertisements for products and places Alice had never heard of.
I can hardly... Is it really my once gleaming city?
The only landmark she recognised was the Apluu Theatre, where she'd seen performances by the Merry Pretenders, an acting troupe favoured by her parents. It was boarded up and had been left to rot. The few Wonderlanders she saw passed through the city like shadows, flitting and ashamed. Dodge was waiting for her up ahead.
About time he showed some consideration.
But when she stepped up beside him, she found that it wasn't manners that had made him stop and wait for her.
"That is your home," said Dodge.
Red left it standing to show how far the hearts and white imagination have fallen.
She grew dizzy, looking at the ruins of Heart Palace, her mind suddenly aswirl with memories. Where Father and I used to play tag in the halls, and he could always catch me by making me laugh. The letters of my name spell Alnon or Onol or Lonan when shuffled around, he'd say. And laughing, I'd say, "But those aren't words." And he'd know where I was from hearing my voice, and he'd tag me, saying, "Why, Alice, I never claimed they'd spell actual words." And where there were all sorts of nooks perfect for spying on him and Mother. And I saw him massage the nape of her neck as she sat on her throne, she lifting her face to his for a kiss. "Can we go inside?"
"If we're careful." The grounds appeared deserted. No Wonderlanders looting the place, hurrying past with goblets and cutlery in their fists, because there was nothing left to take. But Dodge unsheathed his sword all the same, and he guided Alice carefully to the palace entrance, keeping his voice to a whisper.
"The poor and desperate sometimes live here for a while, until they die from imagination stimulant addiction, or Red sends them to the crystal mines."
Entering through the broken front gate, Dodge's heart pumped as quickly as if he were in battle. He hadn't personally set foot in the palace since the day he and the Rook buried his father. Hadn't wanted to return, afraid of what he might feel. He held his face turned away from Alice, wrestling with emotions he was no longer used to experiencing. Inside, the once great halls were scarred with obscenities,
and what little that had remained of furniture and decorations lay in charred piles throughout, evidently used as fuel for fires. "It's empty because people stole things," Dodge said, "right after, you know, that day." Alice reached out, ran a hand along the cold stone walls. "It's not empty," she said. The place was full of the past. At a bend in one of the halls, "Here is where I imagined the floor covered in squig berries, and the walrus slipped on them and dropped the tea platter and squashed the berries, rolling in them and turning himself squig colour." In the anteroom of her mother's throne room, "Here is where I used to charge toll to the servants, not letting them pass unless they gave me a treat of jolly jellies or tarty tarts." Skeletons of card soldiers and chessmen littered the dusty hall approaching the south dining room. Many more skeletons were in the dining room itself. The air tasted as if it hadn't been breathed by the living in more than a decade. The walls were pockmarked from Red's attack, but no weapons were anywhere to be seen. Silent tears coursed down Alice's cheeks. She turned to see if Dodge was crying, feeling the sorrowful weight of the scene. But it was difficult to tell in the dimness of the room.
"Your father," she whispered.
"He's buried in the garden." Dodge's voice sounded choked. He was taking deep, even breaths in an effort to remain calm. Anger birthed from grief. He wanted to punch something. He wanted to make someone feel the pain and loss he felt standing in this place. Alice bent down and picked up off the floor a triangular-shaped, weathered, chipped piece of bone. It hung on a bit of chain.
"Do you remember this?"
He wasn't sure.
"It couldn't be. You gave it to me. I said I would keep it forever." The Jabberwock tooth, the one he had given to her as a birthday present.
She unclasped the necklace and secured it around her neck. The tooth hung at her throat.
"I never thanked you for saving my life, so thank you."
He winced, as if the thanks physically hurt him.
"Dodge, I know it's hard, seeing each other after all this time. So much has happened. We've both grown into adults we never imagined becoming. But I would have expected a friendlier reception from you, of all people."
"I'm sorry to disappoint you."
"That's not what I'm saying. It's just, we were friends, Dodge. We were more than friends. Wasn't that why you came for me in that other world?"
"To defeat Red, to face the cat, I would do anything." Annoyed, Alice clicked her tongue.
"Is that why you danced with me at the masquerade? Was that to defeat Red too? Did you do that for the cat?"
Dodge didn't answer. Alice turned from him and examined her reflection in a sliver of looking glass, the only fragment left in the frame of the large decorative mirror that had once hung on the east wall.
"If you no longer care for me, why did you bring me here?"
"I never said I don't care for you." But Dodge didn't trust himself to say more. He held his tongue, began again. "I brought you here to remind your heart of what Red's done, to spark your vengeance. You're the agent by which I'll have my revenge. That's what you mean to me now. That's all you must mean."
"Touching."
Her fingers toyed with the Jabberwock tooth at her throat.
"Take it off. Take it off and show that if it means nothing to him, it means nothing to..."
Her reflection in the looking-glass suddenly rippled and morphed into an image of Red.
"So glad you could visit us. Now, off with your head."
Dodge snatched Alice's hand and pulled her away as the glass broke into sharp, piercing pieces, tiny daggers meant for the princess. The floor shook beneath them, the walls shivered, the thick ceiling beams creaked and cracked,
and mortar dust and skull-sized stones began to fall. They ran, each with an arm over their head to protect themselves from falling debris. They hurdled smashed wall stones and ducked fallen beams as the old palace collapsed around them, sending stinging pellets of rock into the backs of their legs. They barely managed to make it outside to safety. Alice stood bent over, coughing from dust and wiping her mouth. Where Hart Palace had stood only moments before, a pile of rubble.
"She's destroyed everything," Dodge said.
Resignation to the past, defiance of the present, hope for the future. Alice felt them all at once.
"Not everything," she said.
"Not if she had hope." Chapter 38. Something was wrong in the everlasting forest. Tuttle birds were shrieking, jabbering, making a din. In a moment, the problem became clear. Trees and shrubs had been hacked, clubbed, chopped, cracked in half, or ripped from the soil. Flowers lay stamped into the ground, silent. What foliage happened to still be alive warned, "Don't enter! Don't enter!" An unfamiliar sound filled the forest, a steady, mechanical beat. Endless columns of glass eyes marching toward the Elysian headquarters. The bodies of Elysian guards were scattered pell-mell on the ground. The looking glasses that had once camouflaged the headquarters smashed, some cracked and left half-standing, others completely destroyed.
"Pipwit and the others," Alice breathed.
She took a step forward, but Dodge grabbed her arm, stopping her.
"We can't go any closer. It's too dangerous."
They were already too close. A glass eye shot clear of a nearby thicket, deadly blade sticking forward from the back of its hands, and flew at Alice. Dodge tackled her. Missing its target, the glass eye smashed headfirst into a dead tree. But more of its kind were already upon them. Dodge fought with a sword in each hand. Alice focused her energy on imagining the glass eyes.
What? Dead? Forever inactivated? Can they be killed like ordinary Wonderlanders? Concentrate! Concentrate!
She focused on Dodge, imagined him with increased strength and skill. But the glass eyes had been engineered for this sort of combat. Dodge was overpowered. A few moments more, and he wouldn't be able to protect himself, let alone her.
"A weapon! I need a weapon!"
Alice crawled to the glass eye lying motionless in a shatter of tree bark.
"Must be a weapon on it somewhere."
She reached for the avocado-like object hanging from its belt, a whipsnake grenade, one of Red's newest inventions. She pulled the ring at the top of the grenade, threw it at the glass eyes, and it blew open, releasing a nest of snake-like coils, alive with electricity and whipping through the air. Dodge dropped to the ground and rolled.
Swap!
A coil whipped to Glass Eye's cheek, short-circuiting it.
Swap! 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 Swap!
The Glass Eyes fell. Dodge and Alice were up and running before the coils of the grenade lost their power and sizzled on the forest floor. A fresh pack of Glass Eyes stepped free of their marching column and darted around smouldering tree trunks and broken low-hanging branches after them. The rapid thunder of their approach. Dodge raised a sword to strike, was bringing it forward with all the strength left in him, when, out of the surrounding foliage, burst not the glass eyes, but Generals Doppel and Ganger on galloping spirit Danes. Dodge tried to check his swing. Too late. General Doppel instinctively raised his sword in defence, and it clanged with Dodge's.
"Dodge!" cried General Doppel.
"Alice!" exclaimed General Ganger.
The White Knight, the Rook, and a platoon of pawns hustled up behind them.
"We've been casing the perimeter in hopes of finding the princess," the Rook explained to Dodge, "though we feared the worst."
The glass eyes converged, and Dodge and the chessmen lost themselves in the urgency of battle. The generals took up positions at Alice's flanks, their spirit danes affording her momentary protection.
Concentrate, Alice. Imagine!
With a war cry that sounded like ripping metal, a glass eye knocked aside the pawns and sprinted toward her. But General Doppel, leaping from his spirit dane onto General Ganger's, shot a cannonball spider at it. On impact, the oversized spider bit an unhealthy gob of synthetic flesh off the assassin and chomped at its vital circuitry. Spooked, the riderless spirit dane reared and took off. Dodge, entangled with a glass eye, kicked it in the groin. The glass eye looked down, confused, because it didn't have anything sensitive in that area. The assassin's confusion lasted only half a moment, but it was enough time for Dodge to reach out and grab the reins of the frightened spirit dane as it hurtled past. The animal ran, dragging him alongside until he managed to climb onto its back. "Princess, catch!" Alice turned, caught the weapon tossed to her by the White Knight, the Hand of Timon. 5 short sword blades rising from the handle grip. She raised it as a glass eye leaped toward her. One of the blades lodged into the assassin's left ocular opening and stuck there. The glass eye fell to the ground, and as the rook finished it off, Dodge galloped over on the spirit dane and lifted Alice up behind him, into the saddle.
"Go!" the rook shouted. "We'll hold them off, again!"
Even with the fighting raging all around, Dodge had to smile. Again. A little joke among battle-scarred warriors. Generals Doppel and Ganger merged into one as they spurred their animal away from the fight. The spirit dane carrying Dodge and Alice galloped alongside.
"Hatter and Bibwit have gone ahead to clear the emergency portal,"
General Doppelganger panted. But no matter how fast they travelled, their escape would be as fleeting as a wisp of smoke in a fog. More glass eyes were already after them. Chapter 39. Theoretically, it was possible for inexperienced continuum travellers to discover the rebels' emergency portal. They could have been inadvertently reflected out of it. But the portal was connected to the continuum by such an unlikely arrangement of crystal byways, courtesy of strategically placed looking glasses, that no traveller who wasn't a Lycian had ever determined its location, or even learned of its existence. Hatter Madigan and Bibwit Hare hurried to clear the dried brush from the portal entrance, a thick, ancient-looking glass with beveled edges located in a part of the forest rarely frequented by Wonderlanders. Hatter pressed his face through the glass, peering into the continuum, and pulled it out as General Doppelganger, Dodge and Alice raced up on their spirit danes.
"It's clear," Hatter said.
"I'll go first," Dodge said, and without another word, he jumped into the glass. "Be quick," Bibwit said, his ears trembling. "I hear our enemies approaching."
The tutor guided Alice through the portal's liquid crystal surface and into the continuum. General Doppelganger followed, and Hatter brought up the rear. It was only the second time in her life that Alice had been inside the continuum. For a moment, wide-eyed and entranced by the beauty of the luminous surfaces surrounding her, she navigated it as well as anyone, zooming through this kaleidoscopic lifeline at pace with Dodge and the others. But as soon as she realized that she'd only been in the continuum once before,
"Whoa!"
She lost control, floated up and back, bumping into General Doppelganger.
"Focus your will and think heavy thoughts," shouted the general, "or you will be reflected out."
"Heavy thoughts? What are..."
The general let go of her.
"Uh-oh."
Again, Alice lost speed. Would have been sucked up out of the continuum if Hatter hadn't caught hold of her. With the princess in tow, he steered his body toward Bibwit.
"Hold on to him,"
the milliner instructed. So she did, travelling through the continuum piggyback.
"Glass eyes incoming."
Without slowing, Hatter flicked his top hat. It morphed into deadly spinning blades, and he flung them at the glass eyes, racing up fast at his back. The blades cut into one after another, ricocheting among them. then returned to him. Still, the glass eyes closed in, firing orb generators. Hatter deflected them into crystal byways by spinning his top hat blade so quickly that the force of their wind sent the orbs reeling. If he'd been alone, he would have reversed directions and attacked the glass eyes. But his duty required him to stay close to Alice. He would have to fight them nearer to her than he liked. He slowed his pace. The saber blades of his belt snapped open, and he twirled, letting the glass eyes come at him. Sliced and battered by his sabers, they became disorientated. Unable to maintain their equilibrium inside the continuum, they were sucked from its main artery and reflected out of looking glasses. "More coming!" Dodge shouted, from in front of them this time.
"Out of the way!"
warned General Doppelganger. Dodge steered his body to the continuum's edge, and the General shot a cannonball spider at the attacking glass eyes. Mid-shot, the cannonball cracked open, and the emerging spider latched on to the entire pack, holding each of them fast with a sticky leg, while its pincer mouth pecked at them in rapid fire, reducing them to lifeless husks.
Shoosh!
They were reflected out of the continuum. The cannonball spider now came careening up fast toward the Elysians. Dodge threw himself at it to prevent it from targeting Alice. The spider held Dodge's arms and legs, and though it wasn't designed to live long, would soon fold into itself and die, it had time enough to end Dodge's life. Its pincers opened and moved in toward Dodge's stomach.
"Concentrate, think, imagine!"
A muzzle formed out of nowhere. A rust-coloured contraption that covered the spider's pincers, rounding their pointed ends.
"Ha!"
Alice shouted, ecstatic. Frenzied, the spider tried to shake the foreign object from its mouth. Dodge managed to free an arm, and with a single, wide, circular swipe of his sword, chopped off the spider's legs, then plunged the weapon into its vitals.
"Did you see that?"
Alice cried, holding on to her tutor's back.
"I imagined that!"
"I saw it," said Bibwit Hart. "Very impressive."
But it would have been a whole lot more impressive, thought the tutor, if Alice had conjured a happy end to this nightmare. Glass eyes were again coming at them, simultaneously closing in on them from in front and behind, and General Doppelganger was out of cannonball spiders.
Chapter 40.
"How could she not have been there? Where else would she be?"
Banging the end of her scepter on the floor with every other word, Red sent long-stemmed, flesh-eating roses slithering around the feet of Jack of Diamonds and the thick, padded paws of the cat, both of whom had to keep moving to prevent the flowers from climbing up their legs.
"Maybe the Jack of Diamonds isn't as loyal as you supposed," said the cat.
Red turned on Jack.
"Yes, perhaps."
"My queen, I mean your imperial viciousness. The most important Elysians were there and could have been done away with if the cat hadn't been concerned solely with Alice."
"I demanded that he be solely concerned with her."
"But I don't think she's as dangerous as..."
"Who asked you?"
Red bellowed. Her scepter lifted into the air, its pointed end poised at the pulsing hollow of Jack of Diamonds' throat.
"You don't, by chance, have 9 lives?"
Jack swallowed hard.
"I have only one, which I devote to you, your imperial viciousness."
"Humph!"
Red twirled her scepter like a baton and stood it at her side.
"Cat, why is there an empty box of orb generators in the hall?"
An ammunition container slid into the room, moved by Red's imagination.
"Oh, that!"
The cat had been waiting for her to ask. Jack of Diamonds was in for it now.
"We found it, and many more, at the Elysian camp."
I checked their manufacture codes. They were stolen from your factory 3.5 lunar cycles ago. The thieves were interrogated and punished, but the 12 containers of stolen weapons were not where they informed us they'd be. Get to the point, cat, or you will feel one in your guts.
The feline assassin bowed in acknowledgement.
Your imperial viciousness. You captured the thieves because of intelligence received by Jack of Diamonds. You allow the pudgy lord to have dealings with the Elysians. How could the Elysians have come into possession of these weapons if not from him? He knew where to find the thieves. He must have known where to find the weapons.
Interesting, said a thoughtful red. So my well-fed informant has been taking advantage of the freedoms I grant him by supplying weapons to my enemies?
No, absolutely not, declared Jack. Your imperial viciousness, this is ludicrous.
We'll see how ludicrous it is.
Again, the sharpened point of Red Scepter was at Jack of Diamonds' throat. But thoughts of Alice had never completely left her head, and in a blink of imagination's eye, she saw the princess surrounded by sparkling, effervescent surfaces.
She's in the crystal continuum! Red shrieked. Smash the looking glasses! Every last one!
Red's face, wild with rage, flashed onto the billboards and government posters of Wondertropolis.
Every looking glass in the queendom is to be smashed! Now!
But the force of her anger beat most Wonderlanders to it. In pubs and stimulant dens throughout Wondertropolis, in the homes of ordinary Wonderlanders, in the gated and patrolled mansions of ranking families, looking glasses exploded. Wonderlanders, eager for havoc, ran through the streets, breaking windows and anything that could even remotely serve as a reflective surface. Chapter 41. They were trapped, marooned. They would be killed for sure. Glass eyes ahead of them, glass eyes behind.
The continuum, it's disappearing.
With every looking glass in the queendom smashed, the crystalline pathways that made up the continuum were vanishing. The glass eyes advancing upon Alice and the others were themselves being chased by a void. And the void was gaining.
To be swallowed by nothingness is to become nothing.
At least they wouldn't suffer. One felt nothing upon becoming nothing. The void rushed at the glass eyes, consumed the rear guards first, and moved quickly up their ranks. No more glass eyes. And still the void came fast.
Anyone have a pocket looking glass?
Dodge asked. Alice and the others glanced at him, not understanding.
Quick!
Bibwit reached into the folds of his robe and pulled out a looking glass no bigger than a tuttlebird's wing. Dodge took hold of it. No Wonderlander had ever attempted what he was about to do. There had never been a need. He held the looking glass at an angle, aiming it so that it reflected a small portion of the continuum, regenerating it. As fast as the void swallowed up what was behind them, the modest little mirror added the corresponding length of continuum ahead of them. But now what? Were they doomed to race through the void, safe in this small portion of continuum? Which, had he been at leisure, Bibwit would have pointed out was no longer strictly a continuum, since it connected to nothing. And without the pocket glass it would not, in fact, continue. Were they destined to be imprisoned in this mobile prism, zipping this way and that through pure emptiness until they perished from starvation, or fatigue caused Dodge to drop the glass?
What's that? Is it... It is! A way out!
At least one looking-glass in the queendom must still have been intact. Ahead of them in the void, a short distance off, was a crystal byway, a dead end. Where it had once connected with the continuum's main thoroughfare, it now simply stopped, connected to nothing.
Dodge! I see it!
With subtle shifts of angle in the way he was holding the glass, Dodge steered them over, and they linked up with it. The additional light and the increased play of translucent colours were like the dance of life itself. Dodge, Bibwit and Alice, General Doppelganger, Hatter. They emerged from the continuum in the same order in which they'd entered, discovered themselves in a landscape resembling the open belly of a volcano, with clouds of sulphurous smoke drifting lazily into the upper reaches of the sky, and jets of flame spouting from the rocky ground between streams of bubbling lava. The volcanic plains. Chapter 42. They trekked single file along a volcano's narrow ridge, their noses and mouths covered with cloth torn from Bibwit's robe to protect them from airborne ash. It was too hot to speak, almost too hot to breathe. No one had said a word since they first emerged onto the volcanic plains, and Dodge had suggested they smash the exit portal, just in case. Red's diabolically inventive mind was not to be underestimated. Any remnant of the crystal continuum might cause her to reconstruct it in its entirety, providing her with the means to reach the plains that much sooner. Now Red and her armies would have to travel on foot or by beast.
"The looking-glass must have been used by Jabberwocky poachers," Bibwit Hare had said. "Lucky for us it was overlooked, or we'd still be..."
He'd shivered with the thought of the void.
"If Red saw us in the continuum, she might still be watching us," General Doppelganger had observed.
"Can't be helped," Hatter had said.
Dodge had been impatient.
"Then let's stop standing around and get to where we have to go."
So Bibwit, who carried detailed maps of the queendom within his bald head, led them toward the Valley of Mushrooms. Picking their way along the rocky, irregular ridge, they constantly had to look down to be sure of their footing, all the time reminding themselves of how high they were and how dangerous their passage.
Ah!
A hardened chunk of lava hit General Doppelganger on the shoulder. The Elysians paused, looked up. Another chunk of lava rock fell. Another and another.
The volcano's moving.
Not the entire volcano. Just the topmost layer of rock and earth on the steep slope above them. The ridge gave way, crumbling beneath the Elysians' feet, and they tumbled and rolled down into a gorge at the base of the volcano. General Doppelganger was half buried in earth and rubble. Bibwit came to rest completely upside down, his feet in the air, but he quickly righted himself, coughing and spitting, before he was suffocated. Alice, being the lightest among them, had bounced down the volcano's craggy lower slope and slid to a stop on a bed of gravel. Hatter and Dodge stood wiping lava crud from their coat sleeves, as if surviving a landslide was something they did every day.
"Everyone all right?"
asked General Doppelganger.
"Alice?"
Dodge's voice, concerned.
"I'm okay."
She didn't want the others to think she considered a few scrapes and bruises serious injuries. She was supposed to be strong enough to defeat Red.
"Someone's watching us," she said.
A pair of yellow-green eyes were peering at them from the black mouth of a nearby cave. Before anyone could speak, the giant reptilian head of a Jabberwock thrust forward from between two boulders. Its long tongue lashed at Bibwit, scorching a swath through the sleeve of his robe to his delicate skin.
"Yow!"
Even in the heat of the plains, Alice and the others could feel the hotness of the Jabberwock's breath, fouled by the stink of carcass meat. The creature opened its slobbery mouth impossibly wide, as a cobra does to swallow a rabbit, a display of menace quite uncalled for, since the Jabberwock could have easily fit two full-grown Wonderlanders in its jaws with any old everyday chomp. The Elysians backed toward the cave. The Jabberwock lurched toward them, shot a spitball of fire at Alice. She dived to the ground and the fireball flared against the gorge wall. But in its brief explosion of light, the Elysians saw that the yellow-green eyes in the cave belonged to a miniature Jabberwock surrounded by gnawed bones. A newborn.
"She's protecting her baby," Bibwit said.
The mother Jabberwock rose up on her hind legs, preparing to charge, and in a single, swift motion, Hatter took off his top hat, flicked it into blades, and hurled it at the rock overhanging the cave entrance. Thwink, 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 thwink! Rocks loosened and fell into a pile, blocking the mouth of the cave. Hatter's blades were still boomeranging back to him when the mother Jabberwock let out a pained wail, and ignoring the Elysians, scratched and scrabbled at the fallen debris, clearing it away to save her baby, as Alice and the others escaped unharmed along the gorge floor. Each of them knew, without saying it aloud, as long as they were on the plains, the threat of Jabberwocky still loomed.